Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm talking today to Dr. Kayla Daniel. She also is referred to as the naughty nutritionist because she is iconoclastic and she debunks nutritional myths. She's also vice president of the Weston A. Price Foundation. And today we're talking about her new book, which is Nourishing Broth, an Old-Fashioned Remedy for a Modern World, co-authored with Sally Fallon, also of the Weston A. Price Foundation. Tell us about the Weston A. Price Foundation, because some of our listeners are quite familiar with it. Some of our listeners go, what in the heck is that?
Well, we're a nonprofit educational nutrition foundation recommending ancestral diets, whole foods, real foods, slow foods that we prepare ourselves, foods that people all over the world have been very, very healthy on. So we're advocates of going back to the good old days and really, really good nourishing food, whole foods, real foods, and slow foods.
And tell us who Weston A. Price is, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with him.
Dr. Weston Price was a dentist from Cleveland, and in the 1930s, he and his wife started traveling to primitive areas all over the world to try to determine why many of those people had beautiful facial structures and no chronic illness.
He actually came at it from a dental perspective because he saw a lot of people who had crooked teeth and who needed braces and had narrowed palates. And so he kind of came at it initially from a dental perspective, but then he expanded his perspective to look at all aspects of health, correct?
Yes, he did. And as a dentist, he had noticed that the grandparents of the patients he was seeing had very beautiful facial structures and good teeth, straight teeth, very few cavities, and many of the children and grandchildren were showing narrower faces and crooked teeth and many, many cavities and dental problems.
And having to get their wisdom teeth out, which is not, they didn't have dentists back in Paleolithic times to pull out your wisdom. Virtually everyone gets their wisdom teeth out. And in primitive times, there just weren't no dentists.
Hardly anyone today has a wide enough palate so there's room for the wisdom teeth. And nutrition is the key to that. And that's one of the things Dr. Price found, because it was very clear to him, even in Cleveland, that it was not a genetic issue because he was not seeing the same patterns in the children as he was seeing in the grandparents. So he thought nutrition might be a factor, and he started to travel. And he went to many places in the world, northern Canada, the Maasai in Africa, islands of Scotland, Switzerland, Pacific Islands, many, many places in the world. And wherever he went, where the modern foods had not displaced the old-fashioned, traditional, so-called primitive foods, he was seeing very, very healthy people with wonderful teeth.
And he was a great photographer as well, and he created a photo archive of people in different places looking first at people on ancestral foods, and then looking at the ones who became more urbanized and subsisting on more refined Western foods.
Yes, he did. And that photographic record is so revealing, and we're very blessed to be able to see that now. And the people shown, depicted who are on the traditional diets with their wide faces and their beautiful straight teeth compared to the narrower faces, and because they were not able to afford orthodontics and dental care, the pictures are very revealing. You can see that teeth have been pulled out, that the teeth are crooked, that there's a lot of abscessing. You can see all the terrible things that happen to dental health because of modern foods.
Well, to be a little bit the devil's advocate, there are modern advocates of a vegetarian or vegan-style diet who say that the hallmark of civilization is when humans emerged from their caves and they moved into urban areas and they began agriculture and they started grains. They started rice in the Asian areas, and they started wheat in Mesopotamia, And these were the cradles of civilization, Egypt, of course, with grains. And this the result was that the human population flourished. So what's your take on that?
Well, certainly we got population growth from that. But the evidence is that once people were eating more and more grains and not living on what would be considered an ancestral or a primal or even paleo diet, their height and their health went down.
Mm-hmm.
So in areas like the Fertile Crescent, at one point very, very rich with the agriculture known as the Fertile Crescent, and today guess what we got there? Desert.
Yep. And ISIS on top of everything, because it's so spiraled into chaos and perennial
right.
warfare. So, they, you know, in effect, devastating the environment. So, clearly you are a proponent of animal protein as an important constituent of diet, but you know, in part one, for those of you who haven't heard it, we're talking nose-to-tail nutrition, utilizing all parts of the animal, because that provides more balanced nutrition than just prime cuts of meat.
Yes, Mother Nature in her wisdom gave us fat, protein, and carbohydrates together in whole foods, and she wasn't out to kill us. You know, the fat's there for a reason, and we need that. So animal protein foods will naturally include fat, and when we take it apart and have only, say, the chicken breast without the skin, there's some very big missing pieces there.
And one of the aspects of the Western price diet is that, unlike some paleo diets, it actually encourages the use of dairy, but only certain types of dairy, correct?
Yes, we're advocates of raw milk from pastured cows. So we're talking very, very healthy cows that live outside, that graze, that are pastured. And raw milk from those kinds of cows is a very nourishing food. And many, many people who cannot tolerate supermarket milk, which is pasteurized, homogenized, and from factory farmed animals, actually do very well with raw milk from pastured cows.
And you're also on the board of directors of something called the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Do you rise to the defense of dairy farmers who make raw pasteurized milk and are subject to raids from state and federal authorities because it's thought to be unsafe?
We sure do. Most of our work does involve problems that dairy farmers are having with selling raw milk and government bureaucrats trying to shut them down. But overall, we're advocates of food freedom, period. So that would include everything from the little girl who wants to sell lemonade on her front lawn to the...
You need about 5 permits to do that. you no longer can do... You need the health department to come and inspect your stand before you can do that these days.
Right, and improve sanitation and everything else. We're advocates of cottage industries, the people who are making wonderful sauerkraut and...
Mm-hmm.
And just food freedom generally. But the biggest cause, of course, right now is the whole raw milk issue.
And you're also a big proponent of fermented foods, correct? That's actually going to be a subject for our Intelligent Medicine podcast, I believe, next week or the week thereafter, because we're going to tackle some of these topics in future podcasts.
We are. And that would be things like sauerkraut or
yep.
kimchi or beet kvass, many of those foods.
You say kvass?
Personalities.
Kvass, that's like that weird spelled thing, K-V-A-A-A-S.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a Scandinavian thing, right? It's got a like a little circle around the A. Over, it's got a weird spelling. That's a fermented dairy product, correct?
There's different kinds of kvass, some from grain. There's a beet kvass.
Oh, wow.
Very purple.
Wow.
Many,
that
many
sounds
different
good.
Types.
Also, one of the latest things that's hit the health marketplace is coconut milk that's fermented with a live culture. Is that correct?
I'm sure it is. Coconuts become very popular, particularly with many of the people who don't tolerate dairy products well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing more and more coconut milk and other coconut products in the stores. So if you're seeing that, I guess that's definitely a trend.
Right. And, of course, butter. But natural butter is part of this. And now there's this new craze of bulletproof coffee, which is coffee that is laced with either butter or coconut oil to provide people with a jolt of satiety with the fat that's in it, as well as, you know, the caffeine high.
Yeah, a very delicious product and increasingly popular.
Indeed. And so, okay, so you're also author, and this is one of the more controversial realms that you have tread into, which is a very, very detailed critique of soy. This is something you did earlier in your career. It's a book called The Whole Soy Story, The Dark Side. This sounds very sinister. The Dark Side of America's Favorite Health Food. And you're leading the charge against soy, which is one of America's most popular health foods. Why is that?
Well, when I started that book, I was actually intrigued with the wonderful claims I was hearing for soy. I was hearing soy was a miracle food, that it could cure anything that ailed you, that it was the solution to world hunger and malnutrition and could cure just about any disease, or at least prevent it, and inexpensively. So that intrigued me, but I found to my dismay that, in fact, there's more than 70 years of studies linking soy to malnutrition, digestive distress, immune system breakdown, reproductive problems, including infertility. And
yeah, hormonal. It has a hormonal effect, and that some people claim that's beneficial. Others claim that, for example, it can lower testosterone in young boys who are given soy milk.
It can. It can lower testosterone in babies, baby boys, and affect their fertility and reproductive development much later when they're teenagers and young adults. And the plant estrogens in the soybean will over-estrogenize many women as well, contributing to premature puberty and other problems.
Hmm.
So, you know, theoretically, the estrogens can be helpful to some people at certain points, but for the soy industry to be recommending that every man, woman, and child throughout his or her life eat a whole lot of soybeans is just irresponsible.
And what's this about? They have trypsin inhibitors. What could you explain to our listeners what that involves?
Well, trypsin is a digestive enzyme. We need it to digest protein well. And soybeans contain more protein than other beans, which is why many vegetarians are huge supporters of soy, particularly if they're trying to be on a high-protein diet. The problem is all soybeans come naturally with a whole lot of trypsin inhibitors. And just as that name suggests, they inhibit our ability to use and make trypsin. So there's all that protein there, but it becomes hard to digest.
So it's less bioavailable as a result.
Yeah, we just can't digest it. And if we go to a vegetarian potluck once in a while, have some tofu, enjoy it, the body can muster up the strength, produce some extra trypsin, and digest that protein. But if it happens day after day, week after week, month after month, then the poor pancreas gets very tired.
Right. Well, it sounds like you're taking a more measured approach to this. I mean, you're not saying that for everyone there should be a total prohibition of soy, but just that we should not make soy the mainstay of a plant-based diet, or, you know, multiply the number of soy-based products we have. You know, soy burgers and soy milk and, you know, soy tofurkies and things like that. People really consume an awful lot of soy sometimes when they're trying to achieve protein requirements on a vegetarian diet.
They can. People are always surprised when I say that I actually enjoy many soy products myself.
Okay.
But the ones I enjoy are old-fashioned soy products like miso soup.
Okay.
With the fermented soybeans.
That breaks it down a little bit.
Soup.
And it's a live culture. Yeah.
a little tofu once in a while. I would not call it a health food, but it's certainly better than, you know, soy protein powders and all of those newfangled products.
Mm-hmm.
And I do enjoy a little tempeh once in a while. Natto is a genuine health food,
right,
but hard to find, and a kind of smelly food with a strange...
Very rich in vitamin K, of course. It's a source of vitamin K.
Not from the soybeans, but from the bacteria
that
ferment those soybeans.
Right.
So it's a very nutritious food and wonderful for the bones, and vegetarians would do well to include a lot of natto in their diet.
But Americans don't like it because it's like smelly cheese.
Well, it's very smelly, and indeed in Japan there are special areas of restaurants where the natto eaters go so they don't smell up the rest of the place.
I didn't know that. I got to go to Japan and check it out. So, okay. So, look, I mean, you're not on a jihad against soy. You're just saying, hey, wait a minute, let's take a more measured approach to this because we're having soy this, soy that. The health food store aisles are crammed with all different manner permutations of soy. And maybe that's, you know, deleterious at some level.
Well, the modern soy products, things like soy protein isolate and hydrolyzed plant protein and soy protein concentrate and textured vegetable protein,
yep,
and some of those, they came in after World War II. They're the product of father technology's cleverness. They're full of MSG and many other toxic residues. And they are added to a whole lot of foods that we find in supermarkets. For example, you'll find soy protein isolate in Bumblebee canned tuna.
Whoa.
So in the health food stores, you'll find, say, soy burgers and soy shake powders and so forth. And
yeah,
in the supermarket, you'll find soy added to just about everything.
Because it's a great extender. It's an extender. It's cheap, and it's an extender for more expensive animal protein products.
Yes, years ago people knew that that was made something cheap, but today people appreciate the cheapness and they think as long as I can't taste it, I'm getting some health benefits. But sadly, that's not the case.
Wow. All right. Okay, good stuff. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? First of all, let's talk about the Healing Broth book.
Well, I love the Healing Broth because when I work with clients who are recovering from vegetarian diets or recovering from the standard American diet and they need gut healing and healing overall, the number one food, the dietary foundation, is going to be broth, soups, and stews.
Okay, and the book is available through the usual channels. It's entitled Healing Broth by Kayla Daniel and with Sally Fallon. Morel as well.
Yeah, the title is
Nourishing Broth. Excuse me.
And we have a website, nourishingbroth.com.
Great.
And we're building a broth-making community there.
Wow, I thought you were going to say you were building a brothel because you are the naughty nutritionist. It's a website where they talk a lot about broth could be referred to as a brothel, couldn't it be? Where a lot of people check in and
I would like to open a chain of brothels.
Brothels. that would be good because you could be then you could be the naughty mistress, the broth mistress. You know,
right. So if you get bored with the broth that you have at home, you can go out and get some added excitement.
Right. But I tell you that this is becoming a chic thing in New York. There are actually brotheries, not brothels, but there are places that are restaurants that specifically are making these heady, exquisite broths, especially because the trend, you know, it's cold weather, it's wintertime, and it's, you know, so you go and you have, instead of having a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, have a cup of broth, right? That's, I mean, if you're going to be drinking something, you might as well get some good nutrition.
It's wonderful, and the truth is we can make that stuff ourselves, and if we look way back, Florence Nightingale, for instance, talked about meat tea,
yeah,
and not only for helping heal ill people or wounded soldiers, but as something that gave her a lot of energy. I mean, she had a long and very productive life.
And she was, historically, she was one of the earliest documented sufferers of chronic fatigue syndrome. She actually had some real health challenges. So, you know, if it got her going and, you know, got her into the Crimean War, you know, dealing with horribly mutilated British soldiers, you know, that I think that testifies to the efficacy of her meat tea. Okay, so also, go ahead.
She had a strong will for sure, and strong desire to serve. And despite all those health challenges, she was a powerful force of nature for sure.
Absolutely. So, and also, if people want to find out more about the Weston A. Price Foundation, they too have a website.
Yes, WestonAPrice.org.
Okay, and what can they what resources can they find there?
Lots and lots of articles, book reviews. It's a huge website. Just about anything you want to learn about, you're going to find it there.
Yeah, and I will testify to that. I often go there when I want the lowdown on one or another health issues. There's some great articles there by you, Sally Fallon, and others. You're very prolific, and you post a lot of articles. And finally, you say you're also in practice. And where are you located?
I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico,
okay.
And I work with people by Skype or by phone, so all over the world, actually.
Okay, and you have a personal website?
I do, drkayladaniel.com.
Okay, and help us with the spelling of that, because that could go a lot of different ways.
Sure, drkayladaniel.com.
Okay, so remember the double A in Kayla.
That's right.
Okay, great. Well, and you can assist people with making dietary changes and also in restoring their health through ancestral diet. That's the key to health restoration, and I truly believe that. So thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations on the book. And I think it's going to be a hit because this is it's really timely. I think Nourishing Broths, the title of your book, they're really in this season, and I think you'll get a lot of traction.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Ron.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and you just heard Dr. Kayla Daniel. Her book is Nourishing Broth, an Old-Fashioned Remedy for a Modern World. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for joining us.